Vanwy Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein.
Oh, yeah, I just heard it. It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Vanwy Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanwy.
And I'm Adam Vanwy.
And we are here, as always, live. Just not here, as always, but lately, as always. We're in our little cozy little home office again, doing what we do from anywhere we can do it, because it's important to us, and we hope it's important to you. So, thank you for being here. All you regulars, you're keep this thing going, and the new people, we are very pleased to have you along. If you found the show either by accident or on purpose, if somebody's referring it, thank them, and try to stick around for an hour. We will talk about all kinds of fun things, and you are undoubtedly going to learn something. And what I just said a minute ago was talk about all kinds of fun things, because for the first time in a long time, we had a fun week.
We did.
It was short, but fun.
We needed it.
We certainly did.
We definitely had one. And it's a little appropriate that I titled last week's podcast "Volatility's Bad Reputation." And the reason I did that is because last week I was talking about how volatility works in both directions, and we certainly got a pretty clear dose of that this week. Two of the indexes were up 12%, while the NASDAQ lagged, which has not been the norm lately, but this week it lagged a little bit at 10%. But the Dow was up 12.7 and the S&P up 12.1. So really just a huge week all around. And as mentioned, it happened in just 4 trading days. I'm getting a lot of feedback.
Yeah, there's a little bit. This is what happens when you're on a remote. There's a little bit of noise in the studio. We'll try to talk over it for now. I promise it'll go away because there's something going on that's very short-lived back there. So bear with.
Yeah, but again, this is a good example of why going to cash right after a market crash is probably the wrong move. If you had done that, you would have missed 2 of the biggest weeks that we're likely to see for this year or for maybe 5 years on either side of this. I mean, 2 10% weeks in a month is pretty astounding.
It really is.
The moves that are a much better choice during that time are to either buy more stocks when the market is down, rebalance your portfolio so that if you've gotten out of whack and your bond percentage is way too high, take some of those bonds, sell them, move them to stocks. You can increase your contributions to your 401k. Those are all good strategies, but selling and going to cash once the market has already gone down is probably the worst thing you can do.
I have absolutely no way to get through to the studio right now because we normally communicate off-site by Facebook, and they're having to have a few more minutes to get back on. So please bear with us. This too will pass. Again, live radio. Proves that we're here, though, doesn't it?
Yep, no doubt. And so I just talked about the big gains this week, and we're pretty positive, obviously, but don't let that fool you into thinking that we're out of the water just yet. The market hates uncertainty. We all know that. There is still a ton of uncertainty surrounding this virus and how it's going to play out. Now, things definitely look more positive than they did a few weeks ago, but still, there's going to be so much bad news this month when it comes to economic data, and the deaths are leveling off, but there's still way too many of them. There's a ton of uncertainty. Don't be surprised if the market doesn't just ride this wave back up. It still could go down.
But you remember our frequent discussions about what drives a market. Short run is politics and long run is economics. Well, right now in the short run, we have terrible politics and terrible economics. So we got to expect the worst and hope for the best.
Yeah, and also if we do see some down days, that is going to cause more really, really big up days. So this volatility is not gone. It's been cut in half from about, the VIX went from about 80 to about 40, mm-hmm. but it's just not gone, and I just want to caution everyone that there times in the not-too-distant future. Yeah,
volatility had been bouncing off of the 9s and 10s range, and then it jumped to 80, and that's cut in half again. It could be a long time before we see a VIX at 9 or 10, that's yeah. for sure.
In the long run, though, anyone you see talk on TV talking about how this will forever change our lives, it's the end yeah. of sporting events, end of restaurants, end of this, end of that,
yeah.
just ignore it. You don't know what's going to happen, and no one knows what's going to happen, really. So just don't listen to them. Just hunker down and ride this thing out, and that will be a lot better strategy than listening to these so-called experts that claim to know everything when they in reality know nothing.
I just got handed a note by my crack research department saying it's not that bad from a listener's standpoint, so apparently we're hearing some things on our phone system that you guys aren't. So I apologize if I'm trying to interrupt any train of thought, but I thought I'd keep you up to date.
All right. So pretty much every asset class was up this week. There was some notable outperformers, mostly small and mid-cap stocks. They had returns just under 20% for the week in 4 days. Pretty crazy.
That's unbelievable.
It really is.
They've been lagging and lagging and lagging throughout this big run-up.
The other one was materials, where we saw that sector gain over 20%. Financials gained 19%, utilities 17%, and the worst performing sector was consumer staples at 5%. But that really makes sense because the consumer staples area did not drop that much. And in fact, in some cases like Walmart, I think it recently set a new high. So that's a retailer, but they sell the consumer staples.
Right.
But a lot of stocks that are related to stores that are still open or are even doing better business than they were before because of all of this, they didn't see huge gains this week. Healthcare was the other sector that was not in the top performing sectors. It only gained just under 10%, coming in at about 9.3. So healthcare has been an interesting one. You're seeing a lot of stories now about the financial distress that hospitals are feeling. In fact, Mayo Clinic locally is stopped basically all construction on their site. They're doing layoffs and furloughs. And it's due to from what I understand, the low bed counts. They don't have enough patients doing things besides getting treated for coronavirus to sustain their operations at the level that they did before. In fact, I listened to a interview with a hospital administrator. I think it was in South or North Carolina. He said they went from last month turning a profit of $1 million or $2 to losing $30 million this month.
Oh,
yeah,
ouch.
Overnight, basically. So, really interesting times for hospitals and hospital staff.
That's unbelievable. Well, you know, they're going to survive, most of the hospitals will.
I agree.
There's a lot of smaller people. No, beware anybody who says always, and beware even more anybody that says, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. As you know, the theory of spreading out all this money and the practice of spreading out all the money always diverge when it comes to government. So they did what they always do. Government people are just categorically wonderful at this. They make something up, and then they assign it to somebody else to avoid having to take any responsibility for it. So now they're bickering back and forth again, and we all know it. We got to live with it, but boy, I feel sorry for some of the people out there. Right, after a short break, we will bring up the trivia question, and we'll get into some other fun topics, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Danway Financial Hour.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have, at the moment, our trivia question brought to you, as usual, by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. And a quick programming note here, we missed a connection, as some of you heard last week, picking up some new prizes. We're a little behind. We have your numbers. We have your addresses. It's coming. Be patient. It's a virus time and everything you do, it seems. All right, we're going to let Adam bring you the trivia question this week, which is about the market.
It is. So you might have noticed that the S&P has been moving in big percentages lately. What I would like to know is what the average daily move is in the S&P 500 over the last 5 weeks.
In percentage terms.
In percentage terms, exactly. So what percent is the S&P moving up or down on average over the last 5 weeks?
You got a range, 0.1% up or down?
Yeah, it has to be within 0.1%.
Okay. Which is interesting because we both thought of the same thing, so great minds are working on the same track today. All right, some percentage, and it's a whole number plus one decimal point, how much of a daily move? And I should, well, give a hint at 10:30.
Nah, maybe. We'll see. We'll see how it goes.
There's a good hint, but I don't want to spoil it yet. Nobody's even guessed yet. Lines are open, 904-222-TALK. It's 222-8255. All right, wrapping up. What's going to happen in the market from here on, Adam? See how I deflected?
Yeah.
It's just what I was talking about. Maybe I've got a future in politics.
Yeah, a few more things I did want to talk about, actually. International markets were also generally up this week, so there's optimism across the world, at least in the financial markets. Brazil posted a gain of just under 18%. Brazil had been, some of the developing countries have been hit really hard, emerging markets. So some of them bounced back pretty strong this week. India was in there. Asian stocks were up, but only around 7%. European stocks were up about 10% on average. Asian stocks haven't dropped as much as some other areas of the world. And China, in particular, was not very hard hit by this whole thing, even though it started there. So that was kind of interesting. Oil definitely gave back some gains this week, dropping more than 15%.
Yeah, I got a few things to say about that today, too.
It's back down under 60% for the negative for the year. Natural gas gained a little bit. Gold and silver were up a little bit. And fixed income was kind of mixed this week. It was kind of surprising as money flowed into equities this week. It didn't really flow out of gold and bonds. I was kind of surprised. The bonds were down a little bit, but the losses were really modest compared to their year-to-date gains.
Yeah, most people are using cash these days.
Another week of jobless claims, over 6 million. We now have a there is now a total of 17 million people out of work in the last 3 weeks.
And I've got a quick example of what you can do with statistics.
I think I know what you're going to say. Go ahead.
This week's jobless claims on Thursday were 6.06 or something, million new unemployment claims.
Last week was 6.8, this week was 6.6.
This was the largest week-over-week drop in claims in history. Is that tallest midget theory thing?
It's
you win by losing less or something like that?
Pretty meaningless, though,
yeah.
when you're talking about numbers in the 6 millions.
I love statistics. Because they can be abused and they can be humorous and they can make a point.
Well, I was thinking about that stat this morning, and that number, well, today it is a record. In the coming months, that record will be shattered so many times.
I wouldn't be a bit surprised.
Because when we do start to turn back on the economy, it's not going to be just, okay, everyone go back to it. It is going to be phased in, but still, when you talk about businesses starting to hire people that they've laid off solely because of the coronavirus, they're going to be hiring at such a rapid pace or bringing people back at such a rapid pace. That
started already. Boeing called back 2,500 people.
I mean, you're going to see those numbers. I wouldn't be surprised if there were weeks where the first-time claims dropped by 500,000. I mean, it could be even higher.
Could hit a million.
Yeah, it could. So don't get too caught up in the numbers right now. If it's still looking this ugly in June, then you might want to start reconsidering that. But you just have to expect that this month the numbers are going to be terrible.
Want to talk about the bear market for a minute? It's a brief subject.
Yeah, it was the quickest bear market in history.
Yeah.
So we actually officially hit a bull market again today because we're up 20% off the lows.
Isn't that weird? There's so many of these things that just are showing that times are not normal because you're getting records about things that you would never dream of getting records about.
Yeah, and it just this is such an unprecedented time in modern history anyway. There's definitely been other pandemics, but it's been so long since they've had a worldwide pandemic on this scale and the economic lockdowns of this scale, and we have such better data collection tools that we're really getting to see the effects. Whereas in some of the flu pandemics in the early 1900s, they just didn't have the type of data gathering or knowledge that we have today. So really getting to see the stuff in real time, well, we wish we weren't going through it. The numbers are certainly staggering or interesting, depending on how you look at it.
Yeah, it depends a lot how you look at it. And, of course, it depends if you're a fan of the administration or not, because you're seeing a lot of politics played right now, and it's just no time for that. But, of course, it won't change. I did mention I had a couple words about oil. Saudi Arabia picked on Russia, what, a month ago or something like that. They're trying to start a price war of some sort and drive Russia out of the business. Well, this week OPEC got together, an organization whose days are numbered, I believe, and that's maybe just wishful thinking. But they approached Mexico. They want a worldwide 10% reduction in output to try to get rid of some of these excesses that are sitting around. And Mexico said no to Saudi Arabia. So they each get the big raspberry this week. Come on, people. I know it helps you and it helps me personally to go out and fill up your tank at not much money. But let's take a little bit broader look at what's going on with the employment in the industry, the investment in the industry, and our own security that we achieved not that long ago by being energy independent. If our producers can't make a penny, we're going right back to the old days. And whose fault is it? Well, I point right square at the heart of Saudi Arabia in this case. So maybe it's just me. It's my grouch for the day.
Yeah, but to me it seems pretty obvious their target is not Mexico, it's not Russia,
no.
It's the United States.
Exactly right, and they'll look you in the eye and tell you it's Russia or something like that, but that has nothing to do with anything, and I'm pretty sure of that. Anyway, another good move that I think is going to help the market starts Tuesday. Trump is going to name the new opening our country council, which is likely to be a star-studded cast of economics, business leaders, and so on and so forth. It'll work hand-in-hand with the medical professionals on the other one, on the coronavirus task force, and come up with a reasonable phased-in plan of getting this country back to work. And I think the world of investments is going to love that if these guys come out the way I think they will, on a very rational, level-headed basis. So there's a lot to be enthusiastic about, despite, you know what they say, when you're at the bottom, there's only one direction, that's up.
Yeah, and we're not at the bottom. That's the really unfortunate
part. No, we're not
part.
Quite.
We just saw what happened to auto sales in March, and we still had two weeks
of
normal sales in March, but auto sales dropped 35%.
Yeah, how hard a decision was that for General Motors and Ford to say, oh, we'll just convert some production into something else because we don't want to make any cars, that's for darn sure.
No kidding. And remember, that's only half as bad as it could have been. April is likely to be another drop of 60-plus percent. Consumer confidence dropped 9.5%.
That's worldwide, too.
And it's to levels we haven't seen since the Great Recession, and my guess is that April will go well beyond what we saw in the Great Recession. So
I kind of have to think so.
It's so the numbers are just starting to get bad. They're going to get worse before they get better. So
now, for all you trivia fans out there, we watch Jeopardy most nights, and last night there's a very interesting final Jeopardy question. Said, what three Latin word phrase had many times bigger Googling search day back in 2019?
And I, of course, picked up on it. Yep, Adam got it right away, quid pro quo, because that was when this whole thing that they were trying to get Trump with on the Ukrainian deal was going on. Well, why do I bring that up? Well, first off, because I got it right. Get that smile off your face. And second, because the recent Google search spike has been on the term dividend suspended. So do not be surprised if all of a sudden you're used to having some quarterly dividends come through and they are missed this quarter, probably again next quarter. I think it shows a great deal of corporate responsibility for board members to go in there and vote to suspend the dividend for a while, because cash is going to be king right now and it isn't flowing in.
Yep.
Don't take it as a negative. Take it as a positive.
Yeah, the suspension is better than a cut, in my opinion,
yep.
And use that money to pay your employees. Don't use it to pay your shareholders today. You have to get it back at some point, but you can wait until you have some sales again to do that.
Yeah, I really think that the corporate boardrooms are doing a very good job right now under circumstances that nobody could have expected, and very few people would be very happy about making big changes, but they're doing them. And if it hurts a little bit in the short run, so be it. I just hope it all comes together well. All right, we got to take another break at the bottom of the hour, and we have the trivia question open, and the lines are open, 222-TALK. We'll pay some bills and be right back in a minute. This is the Van Lee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Lee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Lee.
And I'm Adam Van Lee.
And lines are open, and one of the things they're open for is the trivia question. You want to give that out again? I'm going to start with a little hint, though. Since the Trump election, a 1% move in the S&P 500 in a single day was considered large. Now, here's the question.
Yep, we want to know what the average daily move has been over the last 5 weeks. And so that is up or down, and what is the size of the move?
Yeah, and it's larger than one, which is why I gave you the hint.
Yes, it is.
All right, well, they're out. They're almost always out, but they're really out now. Who are they? The scammers. What do they want? Your money. Guess what? It's all over the place. I got a few little things to just be aware of in your life, because you may get hit up one way or the other for some of this. If you're lucky, you'll escape. But if you're good, then even if you get hit up, it won't cost you anything. Number one, fake tax bills, gift cards, and that sort of thing. The IRS is handling these payments. You do not have to participate, assuming you filed a tax return in 2018 or 19 or are on Social Security. You cannot hurry it up. You cannot make the value bigger than it's going to be. And if you wind up not getting one and you think you deserve it, now is not the time to go in there, because they haven't gone out yet. But here they go. I mentioned last week.
There is an exception to that, though.
Okay.
If you don't normally file a tax return and you do not receive Social Security, you may be wondering how the government is going to find you. Well, there is a...
Do I want to know?
There is a new site on irs.gov, and there's a big blue button that says, non-filers, enter payment info here. So if you do not fit into one of the categories I mentioned earlier and you're wondering how you're going to get your check, that's how you do it.
All right, and let me tell you right now, if you go there, go there. Do not follow a link that says you're going there.
Yeah.
This is one of the big ones now. They're sending emails out and say, if you do this and this, you link to so-and-so, and you touch that link, and they know everything about you. You don't want to do that. Anyway, the IRS is not going to call you and tell you that your stimulus check is available and you have unpaid taxes in the past. There is a Chinese wall between a stimulus check and a tax payment. Stimulus checks have nothing to do with your taxes. If you get a call saying you owe some taxes, we need either gift cards or we need to use your bank account, the old Nigerian scam, if you get any of those, ignore it. IRS is not going to call you. That is the bottom line. Hang up fast and erase it. And similarly, if you get a notice like that on email, IRS will not send you an email about your taxes. Believe me, people, they do this on purpose. There's a lot to hate about IRS for most of us, but there's a lot to like, too. And one of them is that they've tried very, very hard not to let you get ripped off by someone who thinks it's you or says it's them or whatever. The things they're looking for when you do get the fake calls and emails and so on, they want your personal financial information, especially bank accounts and Social Security numbers. Some of them are asking for an advance fee to expedite your check delivery. Yeah, right. These things do not happen. There are fake websites all over looking for your Social Security, but one of them is, it's called U.S. Emergency Grants Federation. There is no such thing as the U.S. Emergency Grants Federation. They want you to fill out the form so they can steal your identity. Don't fall for it. Social media, the cesspool of scammers and other things alike, yeah, absolutely. They're doing the same thing on social media, directing you to places like Grant Federation, IRS. They masquerade as IRS agents or Social Security agents or something like that. That will not happen on your social media, not Facebook, not Twitter, nothing else. This will not be legitimate. Processing fees to expedite, they're asking for those all over the place. There are none. Secretary Mnuchin says it will take some time to get these out, but you cannot expedite it. We're doing this. I mentioned last week, the literal check is in the mail. So you open it up, you get a check, and it's usually for more than your $1,200. And you got to take it to some address. The one I really disliked the most was you haul it to an address that's on the check, and they're going to cash it for you. It's $3,000. So you get there, and it's a used car lot. The $3,000 is good for taking a reduction on the price of a used car. Isn't that special? It's a fake. And no scam of that type is going anywhere. But here's the one that really irks me because I'm a big Costco fan. There is a text going around claiming to be from Costco offering a unique stimulus package for loyal customers. It is definitely unique. It is a way to have you follow this so they can get in there, and it's a phishing site. That's the phishing, where scammers will harvest personal data from everybody that goes there. You get that text or any other realtor, whether it's Walmart, Costco, Target, any of them, they're not going to do this for you. It has nothing to do with stimulus. You get their flyer of the week, fine, read it. You get anything else, ignore it. I hate to have to do these things all the time, people, but you got to stay ahead of them. And they're especially fond of Floridians whose average age is higher than most. And it just bothers me. I think they're the lowest form of life on the planet. People try to scam elderly people. And at my age, I'm feeling it more every year that I dislike them. All right. You got anything else you want to wrap up on this, or shall we move along?
Don't be surprised if you haven't received any money from the government yet, whether you applied for the PPP loans or the emergency loans if you're a small business, or just the stimulus checks. Really, I haven't heard even an anecdotal story of anybody getting anything yet, and I'm not surprised. This was such a huge undertaking to be done in a week to 2 weeks that the government just is not good at moving quickly like that. It will happen. Just hold on and let the big wheels of government turn. You will see the money, but don't be surprised if it's another week to 3 weeks.
And I think that's very reasonable. I was listening to a banker this morning on TV, and she was explaining that the edict came down from high to their little bank, and they are processing hundreds, literally hundreds of applications without any instructions. So in absence of having a complete documented set of instructions, they follow the protocol that they would follow for a small business loan. And without being told otherwise, if they don't do that, guess who's going to be held liable for it? It'll be their money, and they have to do this. So now there's a bunch of people in the government that are angry with the local banks because they're taking too long to do this. when they gave them absolutely no assistance. So, like I said, it's just government passing the buck, passing the buck, passing the buck, all things in time, but we got a lot of hurting people out there, and we've got to get these things moving. It makes you mad. Makes you want to throw something at someone. All right, next week I've got a topic I want to cover, but I want to introduce it right now. We did talk about it a little bit last week, I believe. People generally know what TIPS are, Treasury Inflation Protected Bonds. They're sold by the U.S. Treasury, and they're safe as safe can be in U.S. Treasuries these days. But a funny thing is happening because of the coronavirus deal in the economy. Inflation just recorded its largest drop in 5 years. But inflation-protected bond changes its value based on the reported inflation. My thoughts last week, which I've been pondering over this morning and preparing for, this is probably going to be a good time to set those aside. For some strange reason, the prices have been bid way up on these things. I think it's going to be a good idea, and I'm not going to call it a recommendation yet, but I probably will by next week. A general one. We don't give specifics because everybody's situation is a little different. But I want to talk about the pros and cons of TIPS next week, but I'm going to need more time to do it. We've got a couple more things we want to handle. I have to take another short break before the final segment, and then we'll get back into some topics of interest that maybe aren't quite as dour. All right, this is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And this segment is sponsored by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. You can call Troy at 662-9794 because they're working. They are essential. That's a good thing. Adam, a quick rundown on the trivia question again. We're still awaiting an answer.
Yeah, I want to know what the average move has been in the S&P 500 over the last 5 weeks, the average daily move.
In percentage, and it's a whole number plus a decimal, a single decimal. All right, let's talk about the competition a little bit, something we are loath to do. But since it's Susie Orman, she's sort of technically mostly retired anyway, and she was one of the people I originally studied when I was getting involved in this stuff. And I find that I agree with Susie in the 90-plus percent range. So she did this piece about 2-3 months ago. It's just, she calls it the worst money moves you can make. Well, that was in the middle of a raging bull market, and everything was wonderful, and now we're in kind of an opposite set of circumstances. So I've looked it over this morning and kind of asked myself, I wonder how these ideas hold up when the world changes so dramatically. Well, I was kind of interested in some of them. One of them was don't be too quick to buy a home. But I don't think that has so much to do with home prices as it does that people can kind of get locked into too much for their own income. Well, now with so many people having lost income, it might have worked out well, but I don't think there's anything really too much to be learned from that one. Second one, don't lease a car. Now, she says never, ever, ever, ever lease a car. And Adam and I really detest the word never. Usually when somebody says never, how's that? Sounds a little strange. But generally speaking, when somebody says never, never again, new normal, all those things, you should discount them and walk away.
Jim.
Oh, wait, we have a caller on the line. Jim.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Yay. I don't care for that new norm either. It's nonsense.
For which?
But anyway, I wanted to take a stab at your trivia.
Huh?
I'm going to go with 12%.
That's too high, but you sure made a nice bracket out of it.
Ah, okay.
We appreciate it.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank
you.
Have
a great day.
You too. Thanks. All right, there are people who have certain businesses where they're traveling a lot, and the car is strictly a business car. Now, Malcolm Forbes, one of my all-time favorite people, was Steve Forbes' father. A lot of you probably remember him. He was a real flashy guy, very successful guy. He had a rule of thumb. He said, if it appreciates, you buy it, and if it depreciates, you lease it. And well, that's good. So he was a big car lease fan, for one. But some people have a bona fide economic and tax reason to lease a car and get out of it. And so don't say never. I would change this thing and say never say never. How's that? Don't co-sign a loan. Oh, what a piece of work that one is and was and will always be, because the person who took the loan that you co-signed for might be out of a job right now. And even if they're not, you're on the hook. And this goes for educational loans and the whole thing. Good advice. Not enough people follow it. Don't take Social Security too soon. To me, always great advice. But again, you can't say never. There are people who need it early. There are people who know they do not have great life expectancies in all probability. They want to maximize their total return over their lifetime. There are reasons to do this. But don't just do it because you can at 62. This is where getting some decent financial planning done can really help people. Social Security planning is a very complicated and very personal thing, and I find that to be very good advice. Now, I got one potential bone to pick with her, number six. It says, don't put blind faith in a financial advisor. She forgot some words in there. It's don't put blind faith in just any financial advisor, right?
That is true.
Perhaps we'll forgive her, because in here it says just be sure that he or she is a fiduciary. And that's the word that a lot of people know now that didn't as little as 5 or 10 years ago. But the fiduciary, like us, registered investment advisors, we are there and pledged legally and morally and ethically that we will put the client's interests ahead of our own. And by the way, folks, it works out well for everybody that way. So I don't know why the rest of the world doesn't like to subscribe to it. Number seven, don't borrow from your 401k. Yeah, generally speaking, pretty darn good advice.
In general, yes, there are also exceptions to that one. Sometimes it really is the best way to get some money without taking a personal loan with a really high interest rate. And it just sometimes if your timing's really good, it can be a great move. I have a friend who borrowed some money from his 401k in January. That's going to turn out really well for him.
He had to sell high, borrow the money, and replace it.
Yep. So sometimes you're lucky, but in general, don't do it.
That's why one of Steve's top 10 rules is I'd rather be a little tiny bit lucky than a whole big bunch
right.
of good.
Exactly.
But in general, if you can avoid it, avoid it. And the problem comes in if you were to lose a job or change a job, and that would become due and payable, and you may not have it. Now, IRS has eased up a little, I think as part of the CARES Act, that says if you get caught like that and lose a job because of what's going on right now, you have additional time to get the money back in there, which could help save some people. You never know. Hey, don't let debt linger. Boy, yeah, there are people who've made a living out of becoming debt-free, a very darn good living. The closer you get to my age and the more conservative you get, the more you know that debt is not your friend. I do not consider a home mortgage debt. You're going to be paying rent or you're going to be paying a mortgage. That's totally forgivable and understandable. But try to eliminate everything else if you can. Like some obvious ones, like don't spend just to impress others. Don't buy things you don't need. And then we get at the important one, don't retire too early. You've heard us talk about the FIRE movement. That's the financial independence, retire early movement.
Yeah.
The stories out there, people, they just make your head spin about some of these people walk away from their jobs in their 30s and 40s. And they might have a $500,000 or $1 million, and they're just going to live off the whole thing. Every single one of those stories turns out they're working or they get in trouble. There are not three outcomes to this, because you just can't do that for the rest of a long life.
because when you see the FIRE movement and these people telling you, you too can retire young, run, don't walk, just run. Don't go without a will. Boy, do we stress that a lot in our day jobs. You do not want the state of Florida or wherever you're listening from to determine what goes on with your assets, and your assets can be people. You don't want those decisions being made by some bureaucrat in some podunk city in some state in the country. You want to direct it. Get a will. They're not that expensive, and then you won't have to worry about it. And once you're there getting a will, then we start talking about complexity and going to into retirement planning and estate planning and that sort of thing. And there again, that's why you use a fiduciary financial planner. Don't ever buy a new car. Well, there's that ever again. In general, it's wonderful advice. Cars are so well made nowadays, and they last so long. And if you can get an off-lease or a one, 2 or 3 year ownership car nowadays and get it looked over and get it certified, you can get yourself such a deal. My wife's car is now old enough to drink legally. It turned 21 recently. Mine is 10 years old in June, and both of them are just as much fun to drive, and they look great. They run perfectly. So I know it's fun to keep up with the Joneses, but in general, that's just not very good advice. Don't miss a student loan payment. Well, good news, people. You got 6 months where you don't have to make one. You will have to pay that money back. Although I'll talk about this next week, too. There is a movement going on where there are lawyers and people out there who are getting around the student loan indebtedness through bankruptcies of a certain type. And it's something that we really need to talk about. I don't recommend that people ever do that. But the point is, it's getting so it might be a little bit easier, but there are things you have to do to prepare. So we'll touch on that and many other things next week at the same time. The volatility on a daily basis, on average now over the last 5 weeks, is how much?
4.8%.
When was the last time we had a 4.8% day prior to this thing, I wonder?
Just a day, but in the crash of 1929, the volatility was 5.01%. So we're just a hair below that.
And that, I don't ever want to compare anything to 1929 again. It's scary. All right, folks, we got to run. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. Be good out there and stay safe.